before he wrote Chiefs, the debut novel that would win him the Edgar Award, of the subsequent 50 novels that made him a perennial New York Times bestseller, Stuart Woods undertook a different sort of creative endeavor, sailing solo in a transatlantic race. It proved a life-changing adventure, steeped in risk and that special camaraderie that only passionate sailors know. Blue Water, Green Skipper, Woods' classic account of this remarkable undertaking, is being reissued to celebrate the 35th anniversary of its first publication, with some previously excised passages restored in a new afterword by the author. It is a great pleasure to welcome Stuart Woods to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
I'm doing fine. At what point did you think it was a good idea to republish this book and to look at it once again?
Well, I had lots of emails from readers who were always looking for it at garage sales and on eBay and places like that, and they were paying sometimes hundreds of dollars for a copy because there were only 20,000 printed in the United States. And I just thought it would be a good idea to have it available for those of my readers who might be interested.
So for the completist, this makes us very happy.
Yes.
When it comes to the actual story, at what point did you decide that you wanted to take on this journey?
Well, I went to Ireland. I'd been working in advertising in London for 3 years, and I decided the time had come to write the novel I'd been thinking about since I was a child. And I went to Ireland, where I found a flat in the stable yard of a castle in South County Galway, with the help of some friends, and I worked a couple of days a week in Dublin to support myself, and I took up sailing on Sunday afternoons in a 10-foot, 10-inch plywood dinghy that the local sailing club employed, and I was just overwhelmed with it. I just fell in love with it, and when someone took me on a little cruise up the west coast of Ireland between Valencia, an island off the coast there, up to Galway, then I really fell hard. And then my grandfather died and left me just enough money to get into debt for a small yacht to do this race in, and I just plunged into it. You were right to describe it as a creative effort. I don't think anyone has called it that before, but it certainly was. It was an effort that had to be invented.
You grew up in Georgia, so sailing is not in your DNA or your bones.
No, a little bass fishing, but that was about the most boisterous time on the water I had before I went to Ireland.
So what was it, do you think, about sailing and about the adventure and the risk that spoke to you?
Well, in sailing itself, I was enchanted with the idea that you could go from one place to another with nothing but the wind for energy. And that was borne out when I began sailing the little dinghy. And then when I took an actual trip in a boat, it just came to me that you could, in fact, go almost anywhere in the world if you had enough time and enough boat to do it. And I was just, I became swept up in it very quickly.
So 1976, Observer single-handed transatlantic race, and those around you must have thought you were nuts to want to take this
Absolutely.
On.
Absolutely. I remember my closest friends came to dinner one night, a couple named Harry and Lorna McMahon, and when I told them what I was planning to do, Lorna burst out laughing. she thought I'd gone mad. And I'm sure that my other friends in the sailing club, who were sailing the same kind of boats that I was sailing, thought so too, and I think that they must have been very surprised that I actually put it together and got it done.
So the Golden Harp was born. This is a 30-foot yacht that you commissioned, and did you even know at that point what you wanted or needed out of a yacht?
Well, I had been thinking about that for some time when I met Ron Holland, who was the designer, and they were beginning to build this boat in a production line and County Cork, and I went down to see him. We looked at the boat and we talked about what I had to accomplish, and it had the advantage of being both the largest boat I could afford and the smallest one that I was willing to do the race in. So Ron pitched in and helped. We did a new deck layout for single-handed sailing and some other small changes in the yacht, and it was just a great thrill to get the whole thing put together.
How much of the lure to something like this is being alone? You, the boat, the water.
Well, being alone for a lot of the competitors was a very difficult proposition. I mean, it's a kind of solitary confinement, if you like. The only people you're likely to see are going to be on ships that are passing you at a faster rate than you're going. And a lot of people, especially those who had close family connections and spouses and lovers, had a very hard time with that. On the other hand, I was not completely involved with anybody, and I had been living alone in two places in Ireland, one in Galway and later one in Cork, working on a novel, and was spending quite a lot of time in solitude. And in fact, I've always said since then that if you want to write, you'd better learn to enjoy solitude. So I think that I was better prepared psychologically for that part of the problem than a lot of the people in the race were.
I know this is a difficult question to answer, and I'm not looking for percentages, certainly, but how much of your time is spent on the duty of at hand of keeping the ship upright, and how much are you allowed to actually think about stuff?
Well, the yacht is sailed by a wind vane self-steering system, which keeps it at a constant angle to the wind, and you have to be careful that you're that something has not gone wrong and that you're off course. But apart from that, if you're not in heavy weather, once you've got the sails up and the boat pointing in the right direction, then you're free to eat, sleep, read, or do whatever else you need to do to keep the boat going or to entertain yourself. So I wasn't steering the whole time.
It was a race. Did you ever think about winning, or was your entire thought process, I just want to finish.
Well, I wanted to do well. I never really thought that I would win because I had only been sailing for 18 months when I set out, finally, at the starting line. And that had been very intense and action-packed, getting ready and learning enough to do this. But I knew that there were much keener and more experienced sailors than I who were likely to be to do better. But I did want to put in a good showing, and in the end, I finished exactly in the middle of a fleet of 125 yachts, and mine was one of the smallest yachts in the race, and many of them were much bigger. The largest was 234 feet. So I felt content that I had acquitted myself in some sort of manner.
So you finished 63rd, and that was a victory for you. You felt very good with that.
Surviving was a victory.
At what point do you realize that this experience changed your life?
Well, it gave me a new kind of self-confidence. I mean, I'd always been a fairly confident person, but I was pretty much incompetent when it became to mechanical things like engines and gearboxes and equipment. And I had to learn to do all that stuff. And with one great exception, I managed to meet every challenge that came along. The one that defeated me was when, about 8 days out, I couldn't get the engine started. And that meant that I couldn't charge the batteries, which meant that I couldn't use any electric lights on the yacht. I couldn't read at night, for instance. And then my instruments then failed. I was left with just a sextant, a compass, and a watch for navigation. But again, that was the kind of challenge that I had to meet and overcome, and I managed to do that. As soon as I got to Newport, a mechanic put a new battery in it, took a wire brush and scrubbed off the contacts of the starter motor, and the engine started instantly. So there, but for a wire brush, I went my mechanical skills.
Once you have achieved something like that and have spent so much time after just 18 months of learning, do you then go back to, okay, I got that out of the way, now I can just enjoy the art and love of sailing?
Yes, I did feel that way. There was a moment there that I wanted to build a bigger boat and sail it around the world. But I think I would have done that except that I didn't have the money and no sponsorship was available, and it was just more of a pipe dream than the one that I had just done. Also, I had a novel to finish, and in the end, it took me 8 years because I was sailing so much instead of writing. But I finally finished that and embarked on my real career.
Let's talk a little bit about that novel and about the timeline, because you took on this race in 1976. Your debut novel, Chiefs, came out in 1981. So did this trip have anything to do with the focus or renewed focus of that novel?
Well, about the only thing it had to do with it was preventing me from finishing the novel. I mean, you could say that I wasted several years in this effort, but I treasure the memories, and the novel did get written eventually, and now I've become even prolific. I now write 3 novels a year after having taken 8 years to write the first one.
Do you understand why it took you so long to get the first one out of the way, as it were?
Well, I think there were 2 factors. The first is that there's a special kind of writer's block attached to first novels. It's the fear that the book is not going to be as good as you've been telling your friends it's going to be. And if you don't finish it, they never find you out. The other thing was just the prospect of the adventure of doing this. And that was intoxicating. So those 2 things worked together to postpone the novel and put the race first.
Subsequently, in writing 3 novels a year, does the sailing now take a back seat?
Oh, I don't really sail very much anymore. The only sailing I do is on other people's boats. I have a friend who has a beautiful old 1914 ketch built in Scotland, 95 feet, and he has a professional crew. It's the kind of sailing where the hardest work you have to do is not spilling your gin when you tack. And I enjoy that kind of sailing, but mostly I'm on motor yachts, so I'm a partner in a lovely old 1935 motor yacht, and I use that for a couple of weeks a year. And I have a little Hinckley motorboat, a 38-footer that I use for tooling around Maine and Key West. I love being on the water.
And you're a pilot as well?
Yes. I pilot a small jet called a Cessna Citation Mustang. And next year I'll be moving up to a slightly larger one.
And then, of course, so writing is your day job. I mean, that's what you, I would assume, consider to be your job.
Absolutely. It's what funds my other passions, like flying.
Was there a point when you realized that the Stone Barrington, well, that Stone Barrington was a character and was a series that was going to give you that security?
Well, I had been making a living as a novelist for quite some time before the Stone Barrington thing came along. I had, when I finished Chiefs, that immediately did quite well. It was made into a miniseries, and that established me in the eyes of publishers as a professional writer. So I earned an increasingly good living. I think the first Stone Barrington novel was something like my 8th novel, and it didn't become a series until I had written half a dozen more novels. It wasn't intended to be a series. I just had an idea that seemed to fit the Stone Barrington character, and I thought, why waste a lot of time inventing a new character when Stone will work very well? And so it became willy-nilly a series.
And you like that? Because I assume it gives you great freedom as a writer.
It does. The greatest thing about making a living as a writer is that the work is portable. I can do it wherever I am. As I've gained confidence, it's taken me less and less time to do my daily work, which is one chapter of 5 or 6 pages. And now I'm down to the point where it takes me an hour a day to write that. So it's even better than being retired, because the money's better.
Stuart Woods is the author of the book Blue Water, Green Skipper, a memoir of sailing alone across the Atlantic. A book that came out 35 years ago is now published in hardcover and has been expanded. It is published by Putnam. Stuart Woods, a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you, and I should mention that my 50th novel is being published on the 18th of September. It's called Severe Clear, and I hope people will take a look at that too.
And that is a Stone Barrington novel, Severe Clear, coming out in September from Putnam as well. Stuart Woods, a great pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you. Again, the name of this new book is Blue Water Green Skipper, published by Penguin, and the new book, Severe Clear, comes out in September. And Unnatural Acts is also now available in hardcover as well. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.